Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
They just hired the same kind of like B-plus corporate spy who just stole his own work and sold it back to both companies.
Yeah. Boys here. It's an Ethan episode, so you can probably guess that the internet's number one fake history podcast is going to be talking about Warhammer, D&D, or Magic the Gathering this episode, and it is the first one, or one of the two first ones, which is Warhammer 40k specifically. Listeners of the show will note that we're talking about the Tau Empire from Warhammer 40k, but my two co-hosts, James and Peter, say hi, James and Peter.
Hi, James and Peter.
Hi, James and Peter. Oh, wow.
You guys got full marks on that one. I'm proud of you.
It was for the greater good, wink.
Oh, okay. So you know a bit about the Tau then.
I do, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Perfect. I've
read the footnotes of a lot of the... Because we've covered so much Space Marine stuff, and I personally don't... You know, like, because they're so common and so ubiquitous, personally, when I do my own research on Warhammer stuff, I, like cancel out the keyword Space Marine from all my searches and obviously paint the sisters. So I was curious about some of the other races as well. So I've watched a little bit.
Tau is one that, so when I was a kid, I had a Tyranids army and I played with some friends from in high school. We played 40K and I had a cousin who was really into Warhammer Fantasy at the time and he had a Lizardmen army. And I had like two squads of goblins, essentially. But he always said if he got into 40K, he would have chosen the Tau. And that's like the limit of my knowledge of the Tau before I started writing this episode was
okay.
The fact how they looked, that they looked kind of cool. I did kind of have a broad strokes understanding of like the greater good and that they were like the best, the most goody two shoes of the Warhammer 40K races. I didn't know to what extent
nothing.
Yeah.
Are they cow people?
They might be cow people, but we will get into the who and what they are.
Like Taurus, Taurin.
Oh, Taurus.
Oh.
I gotcha. But no, yeah, but no, yeah, absolutely no. Not. Okay, you can probably milk them. It's not explicitly stated that they're mammalian, but we're going to say Loreboy's canon that they're mammalian and that they got titties.
I think Games Workshop makes it so you can milk every single character so they can milk you in return for all of your money.
Okay. It is
canon, I play Sisters of Battle, the only known milkable army.
Okay, it's strange that we are talking about this because this was a point that I brought up during the show. There are two recorded examples of female Tau at all, which, like, again, great job, Games Workshop. You eliminated women from your fantasy universe.
Finally.
Great. I know a lot of very horny, very neckbeardy Warhammer fans who might listen to our show will hear that and be like, well, it's a man's universe because it's grimdark. But at the same time, fuck you and stop listening to our show.
I've got the Sisters of Battle. They're like the most psychotic and hardcore out of all of them. That's just as grim.
Yeah. Again, just more recent, like the fact that there's no Space Marines that are female or women, it's always like, oh, you get your own sect where you can go have your period off in peace, you know, and you'd be the Sisters of
Silence, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's sects that they've created since then, but I mean, it is very, very cashed in 80s and before. You know, when Games Workshop first created Warhammer, but I was going to bring up the fact eventually that there's only two recorded women in the Tau race when we'll get into it any species can be Tau, essentially. But there's only two women. Thank you very much.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Ever
I like
how
you kept referring them to as sects. And women, the sects that get their own sect. Like,
yeah. The sects with a sect. Women. What's all about them?
I think I watched a video from a much, much larger channel called Bricky, which was like, I don't know, like an hour long that I watched in sections when I was painting.
In
where
sections?
He spent like,
I heard it too.
Yeah,
Jamie made the eyebrows.
Exactly.
I hopped on it.
Which was he spent like 10 minutes kind of giving you the spark notes of every army and every race in 40K, which is where the first time I learned about my own army and then like the Tau and all the different Space Marine chapters and shit like that.
Yeah. I guess for people who've never listened to a Warhammer 40K episode of our show before, this is the first for this particular race, and this race I don't think we've brushed up against in any other episode, so this is a great starting episode for anybody who's like, what's 40K about? That said, we won't talk about, we might talk about on this episode things like the Warp and the Immaterium, I think that's, and the Space Marines, which are the only other things from the Warhammer canon that we talk about. But it's probably a decent starting point. If you like this episode, you'll probably like other 40K episodes, of which we have plenty, I would say. I would say more than enough. Maybe so much that this would be the last ever 40K episode.
Do you have a sword behind you in the corner? Sorry.
No, I was going to ask you the same thing because your mic arm looks like a sword.
Oh, man. I'm looking, yeah, behind your lamp. It looks like there's a sword resting against the wall.
It does look like there's a sword resting against the wall in Peace Department.
That is a lacrosse stick from the Russian lacrosse team. When my mom used to work for the Montreal Gazette, we got good seats.
It's like one of those canes that has a sword inside, but it's a lacrosse stick.
It's a lacrosse stick without the net. So at the end of the game, because we were kids sitting in the box, like close to the pitch or whatever the fuck, the field, the lacrosse rink, the coach for the Russian team,
the court, the lacrosse court,
exactly, through like the panel to where like the team was sitting, handed me and my sister lacrosse sticks and balls from the game because this one's got a dent in it, it's damaged, so he just gave them to the kids sitting next to the box. So I got that fuck it, like in 2000 or something.
Wow.
My brother has a goalie stick signed by Marty Brodeur from when he was playing. He played a game for the farm team 1 year, and we used to go to farm team games because a friend of my parents had season tickets to the Hamilton Bulldogs.
Wow. I collected all the toenail clippings outside the Stanley Cup Arena. And they're pretty great. I don't know whose they are, but they got to be worth something.
They might have been mine or they might have been Patrick Waugh's. We were both fans of clipping our toenails outside the Stanley Cup Arena. okay, so you guys want to talk about some lore? You guys want to get into it? We are kind of thumbing our noses at Games Workshop with all the litigation that they've been going at recently, and I had some some doubt about doing more Warhammer content because I was like, do I want to? It does feel like we're promoting them, and it's like, do I want to keep promoting a company that's been so shitty to the people that create for it? If they come after us, then we'll just never do another piece of Games Workshop content at that point, right? But
I think it's worth it because there's some part of me that is just like, when the corporation goes after the little guy, sometimes the little guy can get a boost. So I would very much like to lift my shirt up over my head and smack my stomach in front of the Games Workshop.
Yeah.
Like, metaphorically, basically, just
metaphorically,
like, come and fucking get me, you
and
cowards.
Literally. Okay, so if they sue us and we suddenly get an influx of money and our patrons supporting us through donations to fight the Games Workshop litigation machine, then we will literally, and this is Loreboy's canon, we will literally go to England, take off our shirts, and slap our belly outside of the Games Workshop headquarters.
Exactly. We'll have like lore boys here written across the three of our chests, and we'll just like apes, basically, just beat stomachs in front of the game.
What if we just start our own company called like Gurm's Workshop or something like that, and just like rename everything just a little bit different, but use the same lore.
Just Games Work shit. We'll charge $1,000 for one model, and it'll be a shitty sculpted model by me. Pete's not allowed anywhere near the design of this thing, okay?
All right.
It's going to be Samus with a shittily photoshopped piece of corn on her arm.
You know what? I'll make the paint, and we'll throw it in for free if you've spent $1,000 on a figure.
Yeah.
I'll make the paint is the most bold statement we have ever made on this show, because I have no clue how to make paint.
Yeah.
Just not
a one. You put color and water in a jar and you shake it up real good, I'm pretty sure.
Just shake it enough. There you go.
A can and a label. And then
you see those
color?
Machines? The machines make it into paint, right?
Yeah, they
chugga,
just
chugga, chugga, chugga.
You shake it to paint. That's the key.
Yeah. It's like milk into whipped cream. Yeah.
So the towel.
Sorry, I'm imagining like an old timey like churning
butter,
like the churning
a paint churner
bucket, but like a yeah, exactly like a woman from the 1700s churning paint.
I'm wearing a corset and holding my gun in as best as I can
in front of Games Workshop. Yeah, yeah. Obviously,
damn it, wench! I need that purple paint with which to dye my cloak. What holds thee?
Oh God!
Okay.
What's a Tau? I don't even know, man.
The Tau are a young humanoid species from the Milky Way, known for their huge leaps in technological advancement. They sport massive mechs clad in cool, smooth-edged white metals. Pete, you have some familiarity. Do you want to take a crack at describing their look, their kind of aesthetic?
Yeah, so the Tau themselves, the race, are totally humanoid as far as I know. Two legs, two arms, one head. Nipples unknown, what with the whole... unmilkable as far as we know. But they do have like flat faces. They don't have noses, they just have nostrils.
No noses.
Right,
no noses.
They're kind of like the closest thing. They're basically kind of like a classic stereotypical alien, but with like a more jacked physique, where they have like a soldier's body, and their technology is all very smooth and angular. It's very kind of anime inspired. So, well, I mean, I guess not if you're talking about like Evangelion mechs or Gurren Lagann or whatever.
Yeah.
But very Gundam, very like flat edges and very, very sci-fi compared to a lot of the rest of the 40K shit, which tends to be much more pointy and stumpy. Like the Space Marine tanks are pretty much just like a box with a cannon on it.
Yeah. And we'll get into the grim, or like how, why the Tau are considered like the goody two shoes, which is something that I said before of the Warhammer 40K grimdark universe. But I mean, you pretty much nailed it. They use like, they're known for their high technology. They're like super techie. They use like battle mechs, like walkers. They don't really have traditional tanks. High powered sniper rifles look more like the beam cannon from Halo 3 than the Marine ODST sniper rifle from Halo 3, essentially. So they are.
I looked them up too. They look like Gundam Wing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I clicked on one, which appears to be the size, like as tall as your thumb, and it's $75. Jesus.
Yeah. the Imperial Knights from the Imperium have a lot of like furnace looking technology and a lot of exposed metal and pistons and shit, where like pretty much all the technology is armored or covered up by like flat panels with the Tau. They're cleaner sci-fi.
Yeah.
Much more Star Trek, I guess, but like if it was walking.
Yeah, I would almost say the Eldar are kind of like the other end of, if you take a spectrum between the Imperium of Man and the Eldar, which we've done an episode on both of them, but you can Google them both. The Tau kind of land somewhere in the middle, where the Eldar kind of have these like large sweeping sci-fi aesthetic, but they also border very much into the fantasy aesthetic as well, where they have kind of like these headdresses that go up like really high and have like all these, like they're very ornamental. The Tau are very functional in their look, where it's just like armor and, you know, rounded to deflect bullets rather than bear the brunt of them, that kind of thing.
But they keep the high fantasy where there's no women allowed, at least.
Yeah, at least. So
Fellowship in the Ring, come on.
Yeah. no women allowed. Except for one who saves Frodo's life, and one who threatens him. Very scary. while the Tau are willing to fight to expand their interstellar empire, they do claim to be peaceful when possible, giving potential enemies the chance to avoid combat by joining the Tauva, which is their dogmatic system, which Peter referenced before, the greater good. They kind of believe in this system of everything they do is to minimize conflict and strife and upsetty spaghetti, and they just want everyone to be happy and lovey, and they're the most socialist, I'd say, probably of the races. Peter?
I have a question.
Yes?
This is setting off a lot of red flags for me. The greater good is something that we have often lampooned on this show, as the greater good is obviously the pavement for that road to hell more than anything. So it's probably kind of good on the surface, is my guess.
Yeah, so we're going to get into it for sure. It does seem like the original intent was to be socialist utopia. And I kind of referenced it before, but the horny, neckbeardy Games Workshop fans, myself included, didn't take kindly to it not fitting the grimdark setting. Was this socialist utopia? Okay. So we'll get into it. It's not actually canon one way or it's canon both ways. I couldn't find what the currently accepted canon is that isn't the fan canon. Like, oh, all the fans agree that it's this way. I found that, no problem. But I couldn't find like an official statement on, hey, this is how we intended this to be, kind of thing. So,
by the way, if you do donate to the Lore Boys Patreon, it is for the greater good.
Always, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Trust us about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's for the greater good to get women out of podcasting or something. I don't know.
Jesus.
What, is that bad? Am I not allowed to say that? Damn, 2021 really blindsided me.
we gotta knock out call her daddy or whatever before we can get to Joe Rogan, so we do need to get her out of the way before we take down Top Dog and kill him.
So the Tau expand throughout the solar system, or their solar systems, throughout the galaxy. And are preaching the greater good. But the backup to missionaries is, of course, high-powered lasers capable of vaporizing flesh and bone. So they are willing to scrap when they need to. If you don't accept the greater good, then hey, we're going to go to war with you to make you accept the greater good, basically. We're going to put our people on your planet in place of you, kind of thing.
Yep. I mean, that's a greater good from the perspective of the winner, I suppose.
So... Peter, you did a great job describing the physical characteristics of the what you think are the Tau, with the no noses and the wide faces and blah blah blah. So a fun distinction about the Tau, probably as a result of their willingness to let others join them rather than be destroyed, is that they are truly a culture over a single species. When we talk about the Tau, we're talking about a culture or a dogma more than we're talking about a species. So the species that you described are the Kroot, the ones with the blue skin and the slit nose. Those are considered the Kroot. There's several intelligent species that make up the Tau. They're primarily comprised of the species known as the Kroot. The Vespids and the Nikasar are the three like predominant Tau races that you see. Primarily, not exclusively, of course. So, for example, there are human Tau. You can be a human and be a Tau as well. Large groups of conquered humans or voluntary converts who were impressed by the Tauva, the greater good, the concept of greater good. The humans, in particular, are known as the Gevasa, a fittingly condescending title which translates literally to human helper.
Which was, you know what, Aunt Betty or whatever the fuck makes, Betty Crocker, that one was a little too far.
That's a... When Aunt Jemima married Betty Crocker and produced the Gevasa.
Human helper. No, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. You pushed it with Asian helper, but human helper? No, thanks.
I don't think so. Not all of us. I think I'd probably be okay with the greater good if my options were living in a dusty gutter and on like a Martian factory city, or like join some shinier aliens. I'd probably go for that.
I mean, it's a particularly interesting concept in the 40K universe, where everything is bad all the time, and that's like the driving principle behind the 40K universe. For like, to illuminate the point, people, the Gevasa who join the Tau, are considered traitors, most vile, and straight up heretics by the Imperium of Man. Like,
yeah, well, they're hanging out with Xenos. I would totally understand how that is.
Exactly. Yeah. You joined a filthy Xenos race in the search for a better life. Fuck you. We're going to kill you. We're chain sorting you the next time we see you, basically, is how the Imperium Man feels about it.
I will kill you if you speak to those evil things over there. It's like, wait a second. I'm getting mixed messages here.
So for the three races that make up the Proto-Tau species, we're going to talk primarily about the Kroot, or what I believe are the Kroot. I didn't look at all the races that make them up, but the three primary races, the Kroot are the ones that you see, like Peter described and said, like, oh, blue skin, blue-gray skin, kind of, you know, whatever.
That's the main figurines that you can buy. Is like, I'm more familiar with the toys than anything else.
Yeah, you can get certain like groups, which will be made up of Vespids, which will be made up of Nikasar. I'm super glad, Pete, that you described the Kroot, because that's what we're going to talk about primarily, as the Tau, or the Proto-Tau, essentially.
Okay. Are Vespids like bug men?
They are, actually. I don't know how you knew that, but
I'm glad the entire I think the entire species of like wasps, bees, and ants are all Vespids, as far as I know.
Oh, that might make sense, actually.
That rang true for me from other games, too. I think that I've seen other bug enemies called like Vest whatever the fucks.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll get into... I'm gonna go off on it. I'll say one short thing about the Vespids near the end of the episode, I think, or maybe closer to the end of the episode. But for now, we'll talk about the Kroot. I'm gonna describe them as Tau for the most part. But each Tau's or each Kroot's physiology seems to be tied to their position in the Tau caste system. So they're big on assigned roles in a society. They're a true socialist utopia where everyone gets a job and that's the job that you do and you do it well kind of thing. And like you get a job that you respond to well and you're literally biologically designed for in the case of the Tau. Like you're designed for this. The you know, the worker class tends to be shorter and stouter. And we'll get into the different caste systems, but like the caste that works in spaceships literally can no longer survive in gravity, essentially. So, it's really like socialist utopia a la Max taken to its extremes. They're broken into five. It seems like many of the subraces are a result of the environment or colony world they were originally on. A more Darwinian approach to evolution, maybe. But they come closer and closer for a while. They kind of converge to a point, and then the ruling class of Tau bans interbreeding between the castes. So now they've stopped, you know, muddying the waters, and they're big fans of eugenics, and they're saying, like, we're going to keep the castes as they are because they're good at what they do. We don't want our spaceship-faring people who can't handle gravity mixing with our people who build brick houses because you're going to produce a child you're going to produce a lot of children who can do neither of both. You know, maybe I'll produce some
children. Neither of both well, because if your bones are slightly brittle because you're
not good at
lifting
bricks. Dad
is an engineer, right? and your mom is, you know, like a husky bitch who can like lift whatever she needs.
Yeah.
Then you're just going to be kind of like an in-between, and maybe you can build a shed, but nobody really needs that anymore sort of thing.
My dog's mom was a husky bitch.
That is true. That is true. We won't get into the Loreboy's canon of eugenics on this episode, I don't think, but like whether or not it's good or bad. But
we got an episode about eugenics coming. Don't worry.
Loreboy's here talking about your favorite topic, eugenics. Like, oh my god, yikes!
Who should you marry and why?
Wait, is it not the study of Eugene, my friend from primary school? God damn.
It's whether or not Eugene can have kids. Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay. I would say no, and I think I'm entitled to that, right? okay. So the Kroots, they look, in my opinion, a lot like the Protoss in StarCraft. Blue-gray skin, hoofed feet with the reverse knee joint, often in large plated armor, usually depicted in like beige or gold. Wide, flat faces with just a slit where a human nose would be. There's not too much separating them from humans besides some superior color vision. Their visual spectrum extends slightly further than ours in the ultraviolet and infrared lengths. And they're also worse in some respects that they can't see. Their focus at long distance isn't quite as good without the aid of technology and things like that. Okay. Now, I know we've given Blizzard a lot of grief for stealing IPs. And one we've done before in the past on this show for sure is the Terran Marine design from the 40K Ultramarine.
Yeah.
It does seem like the Tau design and the Protoss design actually came about at the same time. They look super similar. If you look up a Zealot and you look up a Tau, like a Zealot from StarCraft 2 particularly, they do look very similar, but it does seem like they came about at the same time. So the Kroot, like I said, which make up the primary of the Tau races, were first introduced as a playable race. So the Tau became a race in 2001. Which is 3 years after the release of StarCraft, which came out in 1998. But in 1998, Games Workshop released the third edition Warhammer 40K rulebook, where the Kroot were first depicted as a other dangerous alien races, essentially. So in 1998, StarCraft was released, and Games Workshop, for the first time that same year, produced a, hey, these are other races that you should watch out for. But they released it in March of 1998, so relatively early, like not enough time to get to print and having seen, you know, StarCraft for the first time and saying like, oh, we're going to have those people in our game. it does seem like this is convergent development of two practically identical alien races. So knowing Blizzard and Games Workshop, I'm inclined to believe that they both stole them from the same source somewhere else. But
yeah,
where that was, I didn't look into. I didn't try and dig down and figure out who first came up with this concept of aliens with no noses.
In today's day and age, like, we can say fuck them both, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I would love if they just hired the same kind of like B-plus corporate spy who just stole his own work and sold it back to both companies.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the ultimate karmic retribution, I think, for these.
Yeah, exactly. And yes, fuck him, actually, Jamie.
Yeah, sorry, and fuck him. Yeah. I'll say it too. Talk for good measure. I said yes in agreement to Jamie, but I will also say yes, fuck them both. Yeah. Games Workshop and Blizzard.
I don't even pay Blizzard anymore. I feel pretty good about that.
Hell yeah. So beside their striking similarities, the Protoss from StarCraft, the Kroot are basically humans, but slightly alien, roughly the same size and shape. They have four-fingered hands instead of five-fingered hands.
Oh, they're like the Simpsons. Yeah, gross.
But they put their pants on 2 feet at a time, and they have their olfactory organs in their mouth, just like us, okay?
They have four hands with fingers on them?
No, four-fingered space hands, not four space fingered dash hands.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, yeah, you're welcome. they're not Goro.
Four arms with one finger on the end? Is that what you were imagining?
Like four singularly fingered hands.
Yeah.
I said not like Goro, but I do think Goro has four arms, and I think he has three fingers on each hand.
He has three or four, yeah.
Oh, well, if it's four, it's very confusing. If it's three, then it's distinct.
Now, he'd give good hugs, though, wouldn't he?
Oh, yes, he would.
Before he ripped you in half?
Before
you
tore
and
your spine.
And you said they have their olfactory glands on the insides of their mouths?
In their
mouths,
yeah.
Like a snake? Like a snake?
I mean, a taste is an olfactory organ, right? They don't have noses, so they're... Or taste is at least heavily tied... Like, taste is heavily tied to smell when you lose your sense of smell. When your nose is blocked, you don't taste food as well, right?
What would a wine tasting be like at one of their vineyards?
So, I mean, that's the thing. They have their sense of smell. All of it is just in their mouth rather than part of it in their nose.
They breathe it in. They don't have nose. They breathe it in first, and then they like swish it around, spit it out. Yeah,
huffing a fine wine like paint.
Tones.
Physical size and shape may vary, though their strongest cast, the fire cast, are slightly weaker physically than the average strong human. So in terms of pick up heavy thing and put heavy thing down, they're slightly weaker than humans, but that's not typically how they fight, which we'll get into in a bit. Like I said before, only two female Tau have ever been illustrated.
Were they too hot or not hot enough? Were they taken out of canon?
Not taken out of canon. Those two Tau are canon. So they are considered, they're considered part of the canon. And you can still look up those characters, and they exist in the canon. But why no?
We got our female characters right over here. Smash cut to a cardboard box in a dark corner. Smash cut back. Like, they're right there.
Exactly how it feels like. So the Tau only receive limited close combat training because of their weaker physical status. They rely on primary, long range, high powered weaponry and artillery. They are, when you from a gaming perspective, and I guess for anyone who is unfamiliar with Warhammer or Warhammer 40K, it's tabletop gaming. So you have like little miniatures that you put on a table that you've made scenery out of. They attack from the back of the board. You put them all at the back of on your side, and you just want them to shoot the enemies while the enemies are charging at them. The enemies like the orcs or certain Space Marine factions, the Tyranids, who want to get in close and like tear you apart. The Tau basically have no or very, very few units who do that, who like get in close with swords and stuff like that.
So they just like a pufferfish have an airbag in case anyone gets close.
Yeah, exactly.
You made me ink.
they're all squids essentially, and they have like little ink glands which just muddy the water essentially. I mean they do their best to avoid those grizzly melees. So many of the other races seem to just fucking love. They're like, no, thank you. That's barbaric.
A lot of the new Sister of Battle units that got released recently are all melee units. And I know they have like units I don't feel like painting, so I never bought any. Like the Arco Flagellants are like prisoners with their arms and legs cut off and just replaced with electrical whips. and shit like that. So, and then obviously, like, everybody has a sword or a, or like a chain sword or a power sword or something like that in the Space Marine chapters.
Yeah. I'm a particular fan of flagellants because a good friend of ours, a good friend of the show, Bobby Ferry, loves the flagellant faction in Warhammer Fantasy, Age of Sigmar.
Yes. And
like Victor Saltspire in Vermintide is a flagellant who just like, just crazy people who just like want to die in the name of the Emperor, essentially.
Yeah. Bobby loves to be flatulent as well, so
that's,
it works
that
well.
That is true. That
him.
Is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got him.
So
he farts.
He does fart. He's a gassy boy. unlike humans, the Tau have little to no connection to the warp, which we, this is one thing that if you, this is your first Warhammer 40K episode, it's a hell dimension, essentially. It's when people say Event Horizon is canonically part of the Warhammer 40K fandom, which is a fun conspiracy theory to look up. What the Event Horizon crew finds, or when they, what they, what the crew finds when they get to the Event Horizon again, is the results of the warp that produce Chaos Space Marines and all these other, they just like add tongues to people, essentially. A lot of unnecessary tongues and teeth to people, and then you have like a creature of the warp.
Tongues and teeth. Head and Shoulders needs to make a toothpaste and call it that.
I mean, Loreboy's tongues and teeth prevents tooth dandruff. Duh.
Okay.
You ever get flaky gums?
Yeah, dude.
Flaky gums.
Sleeping with your mouth open, you got flaky gums.
So yeah, the Tau have no connection to the warp, from which Jamie and Peter will remember. Psychic powers come from, a lot of other powers come from. The ability to travel faster than light comes from the warp, because you travel through the warp. You'll remember from the Tyranid episode, the warp only exists where there is life. So that's why like Chaos Space Marines don't want to just kill everything. They want to convert everything, because they do need, it, like the warp does need life to get around, which is why the Tyranids come from outside of the solar system, where there's no warp. Why, or I keep saying solar system, outside of the galaxy, where there's no warp. There's no warp between galaxies, essentially. That's why we can't travel in the Warhammer 40K universe. Why we can't travel outside of the Milky Way is because there's no warp to get there. It will take hundreds of billions of years, essentially, to travel outside. So
I wonder if you came across this in your research in regards to the warp. And also, this is relevant because we've been joking about no women in 40K. I know there's a female-only faction of like people who guard the Emperor, which are the Sisters of Silence, who are also detached from the warp. Are they pre or post Tau, or is it just unrelated?
They're probably pre, just based on, and we'll get into a bit, the Tau are very young. They're an extremely young race, essentially. And again, they're not really a race. It's more of a dogma or a religion than anything.
Right.
But they're about 6,000 years old. So we are in the year 41,000, roughly. We're around there. We're somewhere between 41,000 and 42,000 in Warhammer 40,000, in Warhammer 40K.
Right, yeah.
I actually looked up today what is the canonical year in Warhammer 40K. It turns out there's no way to know canonically. Like, they lost track of time. The Imperium of Man, after the disappearance of the Emperor, or after the Emperor ascended to true godhood and became a golden statue on a throne, they lost track of time. And nobody really knows what exact canonical year it is. There are people who keep track of things, but there's no way to tell which year it is. Go ahead.
Sorry, it's kind of funny that the like damsel in distress, the thing that always comes up in these like misogynistic things, the Sisters of Silence acronym is SOS.
Oh yeah. Sisters of Battle is SOB, actually.
That's amazing. That was amazing.
I was just thinking, as far as like timekeeping, like 40,000 years of just like chalk lines, like 4 and 1 across on the wall,
space. That's a lot of chalk lines. So yeah, the Tau don't have any connection to the warp, which means they don't have any equivalent to human psykers, who are like the wizards of the Imperium of Man, who can control the warp. Warp based powers are out of their reach. They're largely unaware that the Immaterium even exists. They made some attempts to study it, but they don't spend too long on it. As a result, they tend to be in the in-game, in the tabletop game, they tend to be resistant to psychic attacks, which affect the mind. So, like, if you're trying to, you know, convince somebody that there's a, you know, chaos demon loose on the battlefield and that affects your troops, that doesn't work on the Tau so well because they don't believe it exists. Kind of, they're kind of like the opposite of the orcs, who we did an episode on the orcs. It only works for the orcs. They believe in something enough and it comes true because they are innately linked to the warp. That makes it true for them. They will just innately believe that it's not true. That said, they have no defense against anything you do in the warp that changes things physically. If you have like warp powers which cause boils and pustules and tumors to appear on enemy soldiers, they are like wheat to the scythe. In the face of that, essentially.
Okay.
They can never have psychic powers. No Tau have psychic powers, which we'll come back in a bit. But their spirits in the warp appear as ephemeral will-o-wisps, whereas a human soul will be like a bond. If you're in the warp and you're seeing a human soul, it's like a bonfire. It burns so bright, it's like thermite going off. A Tau, you'll barely see. You can kind of see like a shimmering outline of the Tau soul in there, but they're just not linked to the warp in any kind of meaningful way.
Okay. Do they have their own heaven? Did my pet Tau go to heaven, or is he at that farm?
No. Everything in the name of the Tau is in the name of the Tau Va, the greater good. And they just believe that if you do good on Earth, you did good. Kid.
All right.
So
this is pretty good.
Yeah.
So like I said before, some research into the Immaterium has been conducted by the Tau. It was short-lived, as they found, quote, "The warp is no place for the greater good and is best left to those foolhardy races who cannot pull back from that terrible realm," end quote.
Yeah. With all the pestilence and rape monsters in there, I think they're probably right.
Exactly. So they basically said, like, hey, we don't have a strong connection to this. They figured out a way to get a connection to that. They looked at it for like 30 seconds and said, nah, that's fucked up. We're not going to fuck with that, okay? Just forget about it. Forget about it. Just say, like, take this dossier and just throw it into the fucking ocean because nobody needs to see that. Of course, we kind of brought it up when I rebriefed you guys on the warp. The lack of access to the Immaterium does have some implications in their ability to travel faster than light. Something other races accomplished by hopping into the Hell Dimension is faster than light travel. Right? You pop into the warp, you pop out of the warp at a distant planet. Who knows how much time has passed, but it's much quicker than light would have taken to get there.
Yeah.
They can't really jump in like other races do. They kind of skim over the edges of it with small jumps instead of one large jump. So they can't just jump. They can't get to the other side of the galaxy in a heartbeat. They got to do like several jumps to get there, essentially.
They have to bounce off the heads of these monsters.
Exactly, yeah. The Hell Dimension is full of crocodiles with their mouths open, and you have to jump on the top jaw to close the mouth as you skip across the river, essentially.
Right.
So these limitations with the warp do seem to color their interactions. They consider the forces of chaos completely foreign to them and their understanding of the universe. Like I said before, they might look at other races as misguided or backwards, but they always try to establish an agreement with them before engaging in hostilities. So they do say, like, hey, the greater good's the thing. Can we find a middle ground? Are you guys, like, working towards it? You know, is there common ground here? The forces of chaos and the orcs from 40K are the only exceptions to this rule, where if they encounter chaos space marines, if they encounter the forces of chaos, if they encounter the orcs, they're like, you know what? We're just going to fight you because we know how it works. Which kind of implies they're still trying to reason with the Tyranids, who are not forces of chaos. But, and we won't get into it in this episode, one of the earliest and greatest first conflicts for the Tau, the first conflict was the Imperium of Man, was the first large-scale conflict with known factions from the 40K universe. The second one was the Tyranids, was a big invasion from High Fleet Gorgon. So I'm kind of surprised to hear that they are still trying to treat with the or hear by omission that they're still trying to treat with the Tyranid, but I do like it as a lore boys canon that they are still trying to reason with whatever hive minds show up of this like nameless hunger who are the Tyranids. And they're just like, no, these guys are probably okay. They don't deal with the warp either, you know? So they're like us.
Kong?
What's that?
It's like King Kong. You've got like the other female Tau who's just like, no, stop, I can reason with him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a hive tyrant.
Yeah, yeah. Just a Carnifex crushing a Tau in its grip. Like,
yeah. But I was also thinking, like, obviously they can't reason with any of the things in the warp, because it's just like, oh, hello, Mr. Nurgle. Like, what do you bring to the greater good? It's like, I was hoping to make that guy over there erupt into termites, maybe forever. Like, okay, how does that help us?
How's that help the greater good, my friend?
Yeah, I can make the wood in the house a lot weaker. It scares people.
So the Tau were not always so high and mighty, of course. All things considered, like I said before, they're a relatively juvenile race. When the Imperium of Man first encountered the Tau 6,000-ish years ago, around the year 3500, or 35,000, excuse me, the Tau were noted to be at about a Stone Age level of technology. So they are
okay,
just discovering fire when man first discovers them in 35,000.
They're not that far behind us now, if you think about like us with our tools and our current like Homo sapien is like 20,000-30,000 years.
About 6,000 years, but we are nowhere near like they were like 6,000-ish years ago. We were stone age, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in modern day 40K, they are kind of like faster than light level technology. Like they are leaps and bounds ahead of us, where they have like an interstellar empire, which humanity
does
not.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. We're working on it.
We're obviously working on it, but you might be underestimating how long it'll take us to get there. I don't know.
Yeah, no kidding. But no, I'm more. I mean, just like 6,000 years ago, if I saw two people banging rocks together, I'd be like, I guess that kind of makes sense, depending on where you are.
Yeah. So now we're gonna dive into the history of the Tau. But before we do that, I think we should take a quick break. Whether it's a sponsor break or another break, who knows? But let's take a quick break, huh? Hop back. Early in their history, the Tau was a culture which rose from various warring tribes. This was a time before their rulers emerged, known as this time was known as the Mon Tau, a word which literally translates to the terror. Eventually, cities would rise amidst the various tribes, one of which would be known as Feotan. A rival tribe would lay siege to Feotan, and it was during this time the first of the Ethereals would appear.
What are the Ethereals, Ethan?
We'll get into it.
We're skipping past that.
Exactly. Oh, wait, sorry, did I bury the lead there? No, sorry. Ethereals, don't worry about them. No, I mean, they become the ruling class. We're going to get into the quick history of the Tau. We're going to get into the caste system, and then we're going to get into kind of a bit of their structuring. I would love to do a follow-up episode to the Tau. So if you guys have liked this episode so far, make sure to leave us a review saying that you guys liked it. Give us the 5 stars. But also head to our Discord, and you can request more of this. I have one chambered to follow this up, which is actually kind of like real recorded history of them in the 40K universe, you know, the battles that they've had with other people. But for now, we're gonna set the stage for the Tau, essentially.
Cool.
So one tribe lays siege to this city, which has sprouted up amidst these tribes. And you guys might say, tribes and cities? I don't know. Like, cities
like
are cities?
Fertile Crescent in the Middle East, like when our civilization was kind of coming together. It's comparable to, because you had like the desert nomads and smaller tribes and obviously like larger cities down in like what's it, Iran now, basically.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to ask you guys to remember one thing for me, and I know we don't do well with this traditionally, as Jamie squints at his TV.
You're asking a lot, buddy, but I'll try. All right.
Believe me, it's you and me. Peter's actually pretty good at this during the episode, remembering what the fuck we're talking about, but you and me, buddy, we don't do so well. So it's the city is called Feotan, and Feotan is spelled Fio apostrophe T-A-U-N. So F-I-O apostrophe T-A-U-N. That's all I ask you guys to remember. When it comes up later, much, much, much later, I expect one of you guys to shout Eureka, essentially.
Okay.
Wait, what do we have to
know? How do you spell that?
Yeah. It was the name of fucking Eugene's kid he wasn't supposed to have.
Yeah, yeah.
Eureka.
Oh, fuck. Okay, so you are good at remembering stuff on the show, only if it's dumb eugenic shit, apparently. Okay, so it itself, Feotan, is a city which people are laying siege to. This plains tribe is laying siege to this city of Feotan. Okay. So the plains Tau wanted nothing less than the utter destruction of Feotan. So despite negotiations attempted, the siege dragged on for 5 long years.
They're the Mongols. I watched a thing about this recently, like the Mongols versus the Chinese.
Just like the Mongols, where the Feotan are the Tau of Feotan, the city, are holding them off. While the thick walls and artillery could hold off the plains warriors, they could not hold off disease and starvation forever. So 5 years passes. Things are looking bleak. Things are looking grim or grimdark for them. Where they start to succumb to the forces of a 5-year siege, essentially.
Yeah.
The defenders begin to weaken, and the siege begins to turn in favor of the attackers. As things look bleak for the city slickers, 2 mysterious Tau appear. The 2 Tau split up, one venturing into the camp of the Plains Warriors, and the other somehow making his way into the fortress. The newcomers
are the Plains Warriors, just their like what do you call it, like Air Force?
Plains Warriors. No, they probably have a shitty Air Force because they're colorblind or something, right? You can't fly properly.
That's okay.
Why all their mechs have legs.
This is a great question because the answer is canonically no. Okay.
Oh,
we will get into who the Plain Warriors are. These are the Plains Warriors, though.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
There's one.
We will absolutely get into who the Plain Warriors are. I have mentioned it earlier on this episode, but we will get into who they are.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
Because you would have to have like an Air Force cast that is like specifically bred to like whatever they withstand G forces, so they've got like inflatable.
No, the opposite. You remember how they don't do gravity because they just live on spaceships?
But not in the Air Force. Well, you still have to fly around on a planet. Like, I'm talking about, like, in atmosphere.
They get there, though. Okay?
Okay.
So, these 2 mysterious strangers appear. One goes to the Plains Warriors. One goes to the fortress. The newcomers exude an intangible yet undeniable air of authority. They are a presence that none of the warring Tau could deny. Within hours, the gates of Feotan swing open, and the leader of the Plains Warriors agrees to parley. So they're just like, these 2 strangers show up, walk to both camps. Within hours, both camps are like, you know what? We're cool. Like, gates are open. Come on in. We're going to chat about this.
Okay.
Once the 2 parties meet face to face, the Ethereals handled most of the negotiating. So they kind of split off, go to these 2 factions. They're like, don't worry, we'll bargain on your behalf. And then they get together and you see another guy in the same kind of uniform just there like, oh, hey, how's it going, Jim? And they shake hands and they say, we're going to negotiate on their behalf as well, you know? This
is something I kind of knew about trivia-wise from like some of the lore I had absorbed in the past. So, but I didn't want to talk about it, so I'm glad we're getting into it now. Obviously, yeah. I didn't want to spoil anything from the episode in the first 3 minutes.
Yeah. I know what ethereal is. How's this? So these 2 figures get together with the gathered groups, and they speak of how important peace and love and drugs are, of the need for understanding between each and every Tau. It was here that they first described the Tauva, that principle of the greater good and the need for each and every Tau to work for it and towards the greater good.
Their religion, basically.
Exactly. The words that they spoke carried power and that same sovereignty as before, which let them open the gates and gather the leader of the Plains Warriors to speak in parley. Their word was so innately absolute that if one of the Ethereals had asked them in that moment all to die in those moments, to take their own lives, they would have done so unblinking. So there's something about how these people speak, how these Tau speak, that every other Tau, whether it's recognizes the reason for their authority, recognizes their place at the hierarchy of the castes, or if it's brainwashing, we'll let you guys decide.
Have you ever been so based that you saw something that would make you kill yourself?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Theory is someone who's never even heard about the Tau before today Did they dip their toe into the warp and like do some evil magics and stuff to take control?
So we're gonna get into that, and this is what I talked about at the top of the show, which was the it's not officially canon, and they were too goody two shoes for a while, so the canon was kind of changed, or the canon was kind of not changed, but like ratified maybe, where it was just like, hey, we didn't explicitly say this, so we're explicitly saying this other thing now.
The Skaven were ratified too.
very good. So across the world, about at the same time, more and more of these figures emerge. Where they all come from, what signal did they act? Like, I couldn't find any reference of what started the Ethereals emerging from amidst the Tau race. But a bunch of them do.
Species?
They are.
The Protoss-looking dudes?
They're Protoss-looking dudes. You can tell them they have a diamond-shaped ridge on their forehead. And that's, like, the only distinction from the traditional Kroot.
Okay.
I also couldn't find reference of an Ethereal who wasn't Kroot. So I couldn't find a reference. Like, there's three main races, and then there's an, in theory, infinite number of other races who could be Tau. I didn't find any examples in my admittedly cursory glance at the Tau lore of other ones. There might be a novel out there or a novella out there which depicts a human Ethereal or something of that nature. If not, and you want to write for Games Workshop, that's an interesting idea for a novel right there, right? So just go ahead and write it, dear listener.
You could have that one's free. You can have your IP taken down on our behalf.
Yeah, or get bought out by Games Workshop. Who knows which way it'll go.
Yeah, whatever.
all these Ethereals come out. The only distinction of them is this diamond-shaped ridge on their forehead. They all have the same message. Harmony and cooperation amongst the Tau, of the importance of working together. It's an after-school special all across the Tau homeworld. Just like, hey, we gotta get our shit in line here. And across the world, people do fall in line. The Tau cannot deny the wisdom of the Ethereals, or are being, like I said, completely mind-controlled by the Ethereals. One or the other. Pick your poison kind of thing.
Yeah.
The Tau quickly cauterize into one before the incandescent presence of the Ethereals, and they turn their focus from war to science. So they were warring tribes, now they're science tribes, essentially.
Okay.
Team Girl Squad.
Science tribes.
Science tribes, yeah.
Like a bunch of like cavemen with like coconut beakers doing shit.
Just a caveman with a stethoscope made of three halves of a coconut with a vine attached to it, tying them together.
Someone's like pouring like solutions into a bigger beaker, and the other guy's like, oh, you gotta wear your eye protection, so he puts two little loincloths over his eyes or something.
When you say pouring a solution into a bigger beaker, you mean pouring a solution into a pelican's mouth.
Yeah. Right?
So, finally, you talk about goggles. There is a very, very old, I think the invention of the modern sunglasses was invented in northern Canada by the Inuit, and it is like it's like a rod of bone with a slit just carved through it just enough to see, but it prevents you from getting snow blinded.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's cool.
Those would be the lab goggles. Like, it's the same kind of tech level of using like bone technology, right?
For our listeners in warmer climes, when the ground is covered in snow and the sun is out, it is blinding. Like, why you see snowboarders and the like wear ski goggles that are tinted, it's because it's brighter than the summer is the winter when the sun is out.
Because snow's more reflective than grass.
Yeah, and that is called the albedo factor. Not libido, but albedo. Look it up.
Yeah. My albedo's quite low these days, I must say.
Yeah. The winter will do that to you, I guess. Lowers the libido, heightens the albedo, as they say.
I'm probably hornier in the winter.
Hornier in the winter? Wow, really? I'm a sunflower.
Why? No, this is interesting.
This is interesting. Let's dig deep on this.
I mean, it's cold outside, so you spend more time inside, more snuggling, and the snuggling is way better. I mean, even though I have AC, snuggling in the winter is still a thousand.
That's just how you keep your dick warm in the cold, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it notches in like at a hot dog bun. You just so comfy.
baby, my dick's about to fall off from frostbite. Do you mind?
Yeah.
So the Tau, having turned their focus from war to science, focus on rapidly developing their technology. Ultimately, they achieve faster than light capability. The capacity.
I mean, if we just cooperated, we could probably do it.
We'd get there. We would have gotten there decades ago if war wasn't a thing. The capacity for the ethereals to control lesser Tau and to some extent other races, like I said before, is ill-defined. In the novel Fire Warrior by Simon Spurrier, it's stated that it's some psychic ability which allows it, which, like I mentioned before, is kind of contradicted by a lot of official Games Workshop publications, which say, and not to say that Fire Warrior by Simon Spurrier wasn't a Games Workshop officially endorsed, but it wasn't, you know, published directly by them. Whereas a lot of the rule books say that they don't have access to the warp or what we understand in the canon as psychic abilities. They can't do that. None of them can do that. But in the novel Fire War, it's implied that it is.
Maybe it's like a pheromone, like a love potion thing.
Pete, a million points. You nailed it. Okay. So,
oh, really?
So some other theories are that the diamond-shaped forehead ridges are present on the ethereals produce some sort of pheromone that make others more open to suggestion. So again, I couldn't find the official, hey, this is what it is. Anyway.
It's Axe body spray.
But the theory that it's pheromones is corroborated by the presence of a surprisingly similar ridge present on something known as a coral, a Q'ORL. It's this insect monster from a completely different sector of 40K space who have the same ridge, the same diamond-shaped ridge on their forehead, and use those pheromones to exude a similar air of authority. It's basically like the queen has that ridge, and when she's making different insect casts, produces that. I have no idea what the Lore Boys canon through line is on this, but I'm sure that maybe for April Fools one day I will do an entire just fucking theory craft of how the coral are related to the Tau, because they have the same diamond ridge and apparently exude the same kind of air of authority on others, but there's no other points but that I could find between the two. If you're connecting the dots, it's like line or dot 33 and dot 35 are on different pages, and there's no sign of dot 34. Like, it's just gone. Okay, so you're
there's
just
no, like. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, the Tau have like four fingered arms, right? Uh-huh. Or limbs, and then the bugs have six non-fingered limbs. So we're kind of lost there.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense at all.
But each of those six-fingered limbs has a factor of 24, which is
okay. Here we
six
go.
Times four.
I got it. I've got the canon. I've got the Lore Boys canon that we can use right now. We'll canonize the pheromone thing since I fucking guessed that, and it was it's already there, so that's close. One of the missing Primarchs was on the Coral planet, and the Emperor discovered him. You know, whatever, just like harvesting leaves with his mouth and bringing them back to a big tunnel in the ground,
as you do.
And
as that's a Primarch.
That's why he was just like, no, not my son. I'm out of here. So that's why him and the Cotton Candy Marines.
The Cotton Candy Marines. I was just gonna say, yeah.
The right. Ant Farm Marines, and then the Alien Ant Farm.
Alien Ant Farm Marines.
Dude, Darnell, put it in the wiki, please. All right.
Yeah. Thank you.
No, so this second theory does seem to be the more prevalent one. Okay. That not necessarily that the Coral are related to the Tau, although there is some speculation that they're somehow related for some reason. Maybe it was just like a lazy writer who is just like the corporate spy who stole the idea of the flat-faced aliens from
himself.
Maybe a lazy writer just stole the idea of a diamond-shaped ridge on the forehead allowing you to control the rest of the species from himself. Whatever it is, this does seem to be the more prevalent one. The more accepted one is that it's a pheromone or something like that, something non-related to the warp, kind of like the Tyranid, who again do not use the warp in any way but do communicate via a hive mind, so there are other means kind of to the same end. Apparently this second explanation that, oh well, the Coral do it, comes up as a reaction to the community complaining that the Tau, when first introduced were too pure for the grimdark setting of 40K. So this is what I alluded to earlier, the horny neckbeard saying, like, they're too goody two shoes. You know, they gotta be grimmer, they gotta be darker. So now it's like, instead of everybody just believing in the greater good and saying, like, hey, Socialist Utopia is a good thing, we're all on even footing, blah blah blah, it's like, oh no, actually it's mind control. That's the only way you can make people do it. So
yeah, they smell weird, you can't tell. That's yeah, why you
it's
yeah.
So the in canon explanation, or the Games Workshop explanation for it is, no, it was just Red Scare, essentially. Like, yeah. Don't trust a commie, okay? Like, it's bad if you believe
you
in that kind
out of
shit.
The crowd, the diamonds on their foreheads in suburbia.
Yeah, yeah. They got a diamond on their forehead and a gold star on their jacket, huh?
Oh, Jesus.
So as a result of this kind of Games Workshop canonizing, one of the Tau sub-races, the Vespid, which we talked about before, the more insectoid-looking race, are often depicted wearing a Magneto-like metal helmet known as Communion Helms, which are marketed as for communication purposes, though they're actually used to strengthen the Ethereal's ability to enforce their will upon the Vespid. So,
it's like the Mormon underpants. It's like fire, Satan, and the Coral is what it protects you from.
Exactly.
Are the Vespid allowed to drink coffee? I wonder.
It's a chastity belt for your head, right?
Yeah. It's a communion helmet.
Yeah. Yeah, so like, it seems like it was kind of retconned at some point. I didn't dig deep into when exactly, but it does seem like it was retconned at some point that the Ethereals are enforcing their will. And again, whether or not you believe that that will is a good thing, that will is a bad thing, enforcing that will is a good thing or a bad thing, is up for debate. But it does seem like they're enforcing their will on various Tau sub-races, if not definitely the Kroot as well, the Tau primary race. These helmets are considered canon, not justification, but proof of that, if you will.
Okay. I just Googled, just for anybody who wanted to know what a Vespid looked like I did. I was very curious. They are a fucking nightmare.
Again,
they do kind of have a bee stinger, but they are just like a shell-covered bug man with like a big, dumb underbite.
Yeah, again, you can get like Vespid units in your Tau army, essentially, and they're canon. That's the canon why they're there, is because they're being mind-controlled. Whether it's actually Games Workshop canon, Loreboys canon, community canon, fan canon, it's somewhere in that jumble of real canons.
Our canon is free to use for anybody if you want in anything whatsoever. When we become powerful enough, we'll come for you. But like, for now, it's all, don't worry about it.
Hey, your wife tried to divorce you, take the dog, just tell her your marriage is Loreboys canon and she legally can't. Okay.
She can take the t-shirt canon, she can't take the Loreboys canon.
listen, partner, take a knee. Your job trying to fire you, just tell them you working there is Loreboys canon. They can't like legally do it.
Sam Elliott commercial.
Oh yeah. Sometimes a man just needs to reference a podcast his friends probably ain't heard of yet.
Certainly his HR department hasn't heard of.
Sometimes HR wants to fire you because you've been saying offensive things in the office. You just tell them that's Loreboys canon. Yeah. God, or Ram.
Right, yeah.
Whichever truck.
So with control of the lesser races established and the Ethereals at the top, they then decide to further divide their newly conquered people into subclasses. So now we're going to get into the caste system of the Tau.
Yeah.
The caste system is a 6x5 matrix, 5 castes designed to determine what one does, and 6 ranks to signify how well they do it. And that's every member of Tau society fits into that box, essentially.
I want to be the best at the lowest. I'm saying that now before we even get into it, but I want to be like the fucking biggest fish in the smallest pond.
No, okay.
You could be a project manager for a video game company. That'd probably be pretty good.
So there's 5 castes, and the top rank of each of those, so the 6th rank of each of those, is pretty much on par.
Oh.
Then
of
the 5th of the 5, so there's of the 5 castes, there's 4 which are pretty much on par. The 5th caste is the Ethereals, and theirs is objectively the most important.
Okay.
Okay.
So there's four casts, which are mostly on par, and then there's six ranks to each cast.
Got it.
The fire cast, known as Shas, is the military... I guess this is actually fun. Why don't you guys pick one that you would want to be in the most, right? I'm gonna guess and or hope that neither of you guys choose the fire cast. The fire cast, known as Shas, is the military might of the Tau. When you buy Tau battle sets, a unit, it's often fire warrior. Like, fire warriors is the base unit because they are of the fire cast of the Tau. You can't, or I won't say can't, but most of the Tau miniatures that you buy, you can't really buy the other casts. You buy the fire cast because those are the warriors. And when you're playing Warhammer, you're playing army versus army, right?
There's also a video game. There's an FPS called Fire Warrior that I have never played but have heard of, and that's it.
Cool. Great aside, because I've never heard of them. No idea what you're talking about.
It's a video game. I think it's on GOG.
Sure, yeah, yeah. Raw Dog, not Raw Dog, but Blood Dog McGraw is also a video game that I played on Windows DOS, I think. So look that one up too, I guess.
Raw Dog, Raw Dog McGraw.
Mad Dog, Mad Eye McGraw. I don't know.
I used to play Bubble Bobble. I liked Bubble
Bobble. Also a good video game. There we go. We've all got a reference, just like old Petey.
That's the time Sam Elliott gets called into HR is because he was calling someone Dog in the office McGraw. Raw Dog McGraw.
He was calling someone in the office Raw Dog McGraw, or was he? And let me propose this: was he insisting that everyone at the office calls him Raw Dog McGraw?
Yeah,
I think Sam Elliott would be like, "Don't call me Sam Elliott, call me Raw Dog McGraw." And that's where his HR complaint comes from.
That's so going into the file here.
So the Firecast, known as Shas, and we'll get into how these kind of names tie into their names and the naming system of the Tau. Their descendants, direct descendants of the Plains Warriors who once besieged that city that we talked about. If you find yourself a hunking meathead with a penchant for long-range sniping, and you find yourself joining the cause of the greater good, expect to find yourself assigned to the Shas. So,
am I a hunky meathead?
Neither of you guys are, I don't think. So I was going to say, find the cast that belongs to you guys. I don't think either of you guys belong to the fire cast.
Okay.
The earth cast, known as Fio, which you may recognize, is the tradesman class. Laborers, technicians, artisans, scientists, and engineers all find themselves among the ranks of the Fio. They are credited with the rapid technological jumps the Tau have made in the 6,000 years that they've been major players in the game, essentially.
Okay.
I will say, it is too late now, but I was expecting a Eureka there.
Oh, that's true. I look at my note and I was like, oh yeah, that's that city that they laid siege to. Interesting. I do get it. And then didn't remember what I was supposed to say.
So it seems like the fire cast is descended from the Plains Warriors, and the earth cast is descended from the people who built the city would eventually go on to become the earth cast.
Right. Okay.
The city of Fiotan, they eventually go on to become, because they were building cities in a time of tribes. So they go on to become the engineers, the scholars, the mathematicians, etc.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, okay.
The water cast, known as poor, P-O-R, is for merchants.
Stupid poor people.
The poor class, yeah. The poor class.
And they're the merchants.
They're the professional beggars, basically. Yeah. They're buskers and hucksters and shit.
They're the merchants and the diplomats, which is probably the more important one, is the fact that
they're the ones when you're walking by in your mech suit, they start squeegeeing your visor. You're like, come on, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You're making it worse.
Whatever.
Here's a couple of credits.
they're those with the glibest tongues, not enchanted with the power of the ethereal musk organ, whatever that diamond ridge is.
The axe body spray thing.
Yeah, exactly. Those not enchanted with the power of axe body spray.
That would explain the lack of female Tau as well as the presence of axe that controls their lives.
I do love. I wrote the phrase ethereal musk organ earlier today when I was finalizing this episode, and I was looking at it today. I was like, it looks a lot like Elon Musk organ, and I do expect that Elon Musk organs smell like Axe body spray. So I don't know why. I don't know why that correlation happened in my brain, but sure did.
Like if we dissected him, you mean?
Maybe, yeah. If you cut him open, if you like embalmed him, it wouldn't smell like formaldehyde. It would smell like Axe body spray. You know what I mean?
I was thinking formaldehyde if you opened him up. Like, he's just forever preserved for some reason.
He's pre-preserved.
Yeah.
So the Watercasts are the merchants and diplomats. They're tasked with seeking and maintaining diplomatic relations with the other races within the Tau Empire, primarily. So again,
the four would have been the guys who looked at the warp and were like, no, we're not going there, sort of thing.
They would have. I mean, it's also like there's all these different races. There is a myriad of races within the Tau at this point. And again, okay. Playable ones, there's three or four. In like officially canonized ones, there's three or four. But you could say in your mind, like they made zebras Tau, you know, like zebras, they're Tau now. Hyenas, they're Tau now. Muskrats,
just one
Tau now.
One little Skaven is a Tau, like one little, yeah, doesn't one little, fit in with the rest of them.
One little lost Skaven is a Tau now. These guys are primarily in charge of, you know, embassy relations, diplomatic relations with these other like inner sphere Tau races. So like there are human Tau, and the Watercast is primarily in charge of diplomatic relations with them. They do it outside of the Tau sphere as well. But it does kind of seem like the Ethereals, who we'll get into, probably are the primary players in first contacts. And like, hey, we're gonna set the groundwork for this. We're gonna exude some pheromones on you, and then I'm gonna hand you off to my assistant, the Watercast.
Okay. Right.
That's so gross. Yeah, have a seat. We'll be right with you. Like, here's your pheromones.
Yeah. This guy's gonna put his forehead in your face really quick, and then you can come into the office.
Yeah, that's it. Just right. Let me. Do you mind if I rub your cheeks? Okay, there you go.
Okay. that feels nice.
The Aircast, known as Core, function as messengers and pilots. The plane warriors.
These are the plane warriors,
making up most of the Tau Navy. They're taller, more slender bodies. Excuse me. With long, skinny appendages and hollow bones, apparently makes their lives in zero-gravity starships and space stations easier. They are reluctant to ever descend to land, as for most of them, their muscles and organs have atrophied to the point where doing so would mean injury and broken bone, and quite often, death.
Okay.
Their ancestors, during the Mon Tau, which was the period of time before the Ethereals showed up, the Terror, as I told you guys before, during that time, they had membranes stretching between their limbs, allowing them to ride on air currents. So they were kind of literal birds in some sense, where their limbs had these membranes stretching.
More like a bat, which you should be familiar with at this point.
I'm semi familiar with bats. I will admit to you guys.
Yeah.
I don't know if I told you guys, but the day that I left, I asked my brother to stay in our house, and there was a bat in the house.
Again?
Well, yeah, he and he's not a vegetarian like I am, so he just killed it. And I was like, you know what, dude?
Oh, fuck.
You know what, dude? Kind of thank you, though.
like, how'd he do it? Like, like the rock people's elbow down onto it? Yeah, or?
Tennis racket. I say I felt kind of thank you, but I had a serious moment of melancholy today where I was just like, man, that bat, was he just trapped in here for days, didn't know how to get out? But I'm a big softy who's not prone to death at all. It scares me. So
as long as your brother ate the bat, then it's all fine, right?
No, it's in my freezer waiting to go to the provincial health department. They're going to call me tomorrow to have someone come pick it up to test it for rabies.
Oh, yeah, because like rabies bat. And fleas and shit. Yeah.
Dude, you got crazy shit in your freezer.
I have a dead bat in my freezer right now.
I remember going to your parents' place one time. There's just a bunch of horse cum in the freezer.
There was always horse cum in the freezer at the Palmer Estate, okay? We were never lacking in horse cum.
Horse farm.
we were never lacking in horse cum, okay?
Clearly labeled, I hope.
So finally, moving away from horse cum, we got the daddy class, the Ethereals. Their class is known as the Aun. They're the political and religious leaders of the Tau, which should be no surprise to you guys at this point.
Yeah.
They resemble fire and water casts. All the different casts do look different. Again, like long, slender is the Core, the Air class. The Fio, the Earth class, are typically much shorter and much more stout, kind of like dwarves almost. Yeah. The Aun resemble the fire and water cast, who look kind of similar, but for that diamond-shaped ridge on their foreheads. Right.
Okay.
They are.
What do the Poor look like?
The Poor are the water cast, so they kind of look like fire cast. They look like the Protoss, just a typical zealot, essentially. There's some differences. I didn't write them down because they were so small that I didn't think it mattered.
Right.
The Aun, the ethereals, are sometimes seen on the battlefield, though usually I don't think there's a playable class. This is something that I could have easily looked up, but I didn't. I don't think there's any playable ethereals. If there is, there's probably one or two. I think they're mostly fire or shas. When they're seen on the battlefield, whether they're leaders or observers, it's always difficult to determine. So if they're present on a battlefield, it's usually just as a spiritual leader, not as any kind of military force.
So I did look it up. Pete to the rescue, Jamie pulling up the clip. There are at least six single ethereal figurines. One of them is riding a silly looking like hover bike, and then the other guys are just kind of like, I don't know,
chilling.
Blue aliens in robes with a scepter.
Chilling, yeah, cool. Wizards essentially.
Yeah, it's probably one of those like single $75 figurines that Jamie was talking about.
Yeah, exactly, honestly. exactly, at least if not more.
Yeah.
So the current leader of the ethereals, and therefore the Tau, is a town named Aunva, master of the Undying Spirit, and Auno of the Tau Empire. Auno is the title of the emperor, essentially. Now we're going to get into the ranks and why the Auno is considered the emperor, because again, the caste is the Aun, and there's a suffix apostrophe O at the end of it.
I would take the diplomat class just as my life as an office worker and like doodler sort of thing. Uh-huh. I would definitely be a decent, I don't know, like rep to send to some sort of like 40K Star Trek embassy to blow mist in people's faces and control their minds.
You know how to start your shirt is what you're saying. I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't mind. I don't mind a little bit of blue collar. Tau work.
I think I'd go fire or water. Probably water. I think I'd be
the army.
Or no, sorry, earth or water.
Earth or water.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd either be the stoutman or the merchant. I think merchant actually for my role playing future. I guess.
I would say you're both. Pete, you said blue collar, but they're definitely the white collar. You probably said blue collar because it's the water cast. But yeah, they're definitely the white collar ranks. I would have put you both there as well. I would like to think that I'd be the core, just the spacefaring one, because that sounds dope as hell to me, and I love the idea of flying and going to space. But
gravity's a real problem for you.
Gravity, I'm so freaking earthbound. I can't get out of it.
The worst part about flying, like interplanetary flying, though, is like there's just not enough leg room, and like the food's great.
I'm not willing to pay for first class.
Yeah.
So we'll get into the ranks now, the ranks of each caste essentially. So there's six of them. Sal, SAAL, is the cadet or intern rank, as I would call it. It's given to a Tau as soon as they enter the service of their caste. So if we were humans and the Tau showed up and we three said, "Hey, we want to join as." The greater good. That sounds great. We're a pretty socialist podcast. So we say, yeah, thumbs up to you. We would enter as Sal rank essentially.
Okay.
La is the next rank. The first and lowest true rank of Tau society. So you got to get past Sal to become a true.
Already, rank. I could tell that they learned this from The Sound of Music.
Yeah, I was gonna say Ray me after this.
Sal, a deer, a female deer.
Well, yeah, because like we've been broadcasting The Sound of Music for 41,000 years at this point, so the signal reached the Tau when they were still in the Stone Age. Yeah. Is I guess what happened with that one.
So a La is the next rank. So a Shasla, for example, Shas meaning fire, and La meaning the first rank, a Shasla would be a fire warrior, whereas a Fiola would be a manual laborer, and a Korla would be a red shirt on a Tau warship, essentially.
Okay.
Right.
And so like a poor law.
Exactly. Well. Okay. So I would be given what I chose the core cast, I would be a Korsal, having joined the Navy. you two would be poor Sals. As a couple of poor Sals, if you will. Having joined the merchant class.
Better Cal Sal on Netflix.
From there it goes up. There's Uy Vre and then L as the second highest Tau rank. So Uy and Vre, I won't get into the specifics of them because it just kind of, we're just walking up at this point.
Yeah.
L is the second highest Tau rank. Shas L are commanders. Kor L are ship captains. And Fio L are engineers, essentially.
Okay.
As a relative mark to our current society. Finally, are the O, the highest Tau rank. Kor O are fleet admirals. Por O are ambassadors. And of course, the Aun O is the ethereal supreme.
Right.
Mr. President. Mr. Aun O.
Por O sounds like you're trying to call someone poor, but you don't know how to speak Spanish properly.
Porro.
Paquito
Porro.
Perro is dog, I think.
Perro is dog, yeah.
Perro is dog. Poquito is small. Your little porro would be Paquito Porro. If porro meant you little poor,
Porro is probably a Spanish word. It sounds right.
Probably, yeah. Pollo is chicken.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love chicken.
On the subject of Breaking Bad again. Now that we're talking about that universe.
I started typing Porro into my browser and it showed all the bad stuff because it starts with P-O-R.
Thank God we don't have Sutra on, huh?
Yeah.
Porro in English is further from Latin.
Okay. In English? No, so it's Spanish, right?
It's a detected.
It just means you're poor. It means you're poor, like you're on your face of your skin. Poro is like a small pore.
Oh, I see.
Oh, poro is joint from Spanish to English.
Joint. Okay, sure. I guess depending how I just put P-O-R-O. That's
poor. I use two R's. Yeah.
Anyways.
So these casts, if not their ranks, were kind of in place before the arrival of the Ethereals. Like I said, with the core. They were like a distinct species of bird person before the Ethereals showed up, right? And they were kind of shoehorned into their respective roles in a lot of ways where it's like, hey, you're bird people. You'd be good in spaceships. So we're just going to put you in space. You have hollow bones. We're going to put you in spaceships.
Saves on fuel. That shit's not cheap.
Exactly. It was convenient. Like I said, eventually the Ethereals do ban interbreeding between the castes because they have everything that they need to do what they need to do well. So they're just like, hey, no muddying the waters, essentially, which is fucked up.
Yeah.
But despite the tyrant vibes you can draw from the Ethereals, the Tau are still the canon's goodiest two-shoes, the most open and tolerant of the intelligent species in the 40K universe by a landslide. Humans, I don't even think, rank top three.
You haven't mentioned heresy or... You haven't said the word filthy a single time in this entire episode.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think these guys seem pretty all right.
They do respect the lower ranks and other castes, and a Shas Vre would recognize the importance of a Fio La worker who assembled their battle suit. A knight would be like, hey, a Fio La is in it. It's like, it is still kind of the socialist utopia where it's like, you know what? The country couldn't run without farmers, right?
Yeah.
With that in place, with the caste system finally in place, the Tau got to work expanding throughout the stars. They got their FTL drives. They have their caste system. They got everything they need. Through a series of five so-called sphere expansions, which are marked by military campaigns, they propagate throughout the universe. They take over worlds. A couple water ambassadors go to a couple different worlds of the Imperium of Man and take them over completely. Worlds are colonized, conquered, and sometimes, if not often, just assimilated as the locals hear the Ethereals and accept the greater good. Their expansion claims about 20 fully developed star systems called SEPs in the Tau language, and those SEPs contain hundreds of worlds. I don't know what these star systems look like per se, but they get hundreds of worlds within the Tau dogma, essentially, which is still relatively small in the scale of the galaxy, right? We're talking about hundreds of millions of stars, if not more. But they've carved out a little sector for themselves. as they continue to expand, they inevitably find themselves clashing with the unbending conviction of the Imperium of Man, which would be no surprise to anyone. That man is not willing to accept other.
Yeah.
be that other man or other not man.
Other idea, yeah, or anything like that. Frankly, it's just like, oh yeah, this like completely harmless blue alien reached out slowly with its hand open and what looked like a smile on its face. And then we killed it and everything it looked like it.
Yeah. So the Damocles Gulf Crusade, perhaps named for the eponymous sword, with these two powers at opposition with the ever-present threat of the still darker forces of the 40K universe, gets kicked off, essentially. Damocles, the Sword of Damocles is a story of a man, Damocles, who goes to Dionysius the King and says, you got, your life is great, dude. Your life is great. And Dionysius says, hey, it's not all great. Why don't you step up here onto the throne? So Damocles gets up on the throne. Dionysius says, okay, like, you got all this food, all this women, all this gold, whatever you want, you have it. But there is a sword tied by a horsehair above your head, which could break at any time and kill you, which represents the ever-present threat of other forces killing you, which for the Tau and the humans in a galaxy full of, I mean, horrible, horrible monsters. There's Tyranids, there's orcs, there's the forces of chaos, there's this constant ever-present threat of the sword above your head. And there are two...
just like the human factions.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably a lot of horses, too, to get all that horse hair.
Yeah, exactly. All those swords. Yeah. All the swords needed.
Yeah.
How many horse hairs to build a spaceship? Is a question that philosophers have been pondering for centuries.
You got horse hair? No. Yeah, you have horse hairs in the freezer too, or what?
Always. I got horse cum, bats, and horse hair, baby. That's it. So members of the Tau Watercast established at some point trade agreements with Imperial worlds on the frontier of Tau space. Alarmed by the threat of alien contamination, the Administratum readies a totally chill and appropriate response.
A crusade.
The Damocles Crusade kicked off a century later, with human forces destroying several Tau settlements and cutting deep into their empire, the Tau Empire, that is. But for now, we'll put a pin in it and maybe talk more about Tau on a future episode. If you guys like the episode and you haven't left us a review, please do. If you haven't recommended it to your friends, then please do. If you've done both those things, kick back and relax, baby.
Yeah.
More Tau's coming someday. Just keep being there, and we'll keep doing these. That's how it's gone so far.
Sam Elliott. I think he'd like this one.
Sam Elliott would love this podcast, especially us talking about... What do we call Sam Elliott?
Raw Dog McGraw.
Raw Dog McGraw. I'm going to find the actual title of that while Jamie kicks off with what he wanted to plug on today's episode.
What I wanted to plug is my dog barking. Ice, woof.
Oh, that was great.
Very quiet. But add me on Steam, J Milk. You'll find me. And Peter, what do you got?
My nose started bleeding halfway through that episode. That was awkward. I managed to keep that under wraps, thankfully. Check out at Lore Boys Podcast on Instagram. Check out theloreboys.com/about to links to everything. Patreon, merch. More importantly, Paramount, Discord. Get in there. Talk to us. Talk to other people. Listen to the show. Some of our friends as well from real life. Play games with people, suggest lore, whatever you want. Just get in there. Do it.
Yeah, I mean, the Discord's a lot of fun. It's where we do most of our interaction, honestly. And I wish we were more motivated to all you people out there on Twitter, on Facebook, and all these other things. But by God, we're just not. And we've tried.
Facebook's pretty low-key. Twitter,
we've all abandoned. It was my job, and I said, you know what? For my own health, I'm not doing this.
Yeah,
Discord, exactly. I stopped doing that. Yeah. But the Discord is a great place. Go to loreboys.com/about, and you can find links to all our socials. Again, the Twitter one, who knows if we're there. If you're a time traveler from one of our earlier episodes, we also don't have the URL, pornhubcaps.com.
Oh, that's true.
That's what came up when I was trying to look up Poro, of course.
Oh, yeah.
If you're a new listener who's like, what the hell is pornhubcaps.com? Just go back and try and find it at our old episodes.
Transformers episode.
Oh, come on. You're just going to spoil the search for him. Okay, yeah, it's our Transformers episode. Just go back. It is. You can listen to it there. I got a cat climbing on my chair right now. But for anyone who wants to support the show financially, we do have a Patreon. The biggest and most girthy shout-outs to our patrons at patreon.com/theloreboys. You can just support us. We have a $1 tier. We have a $3 tier. Do we only have a $3 tier? We might not have a $1 tier. Anyway.
$3, $9, $15, and then a joke.
We got tiers. Yeah. So go there, check them out. Anybody who does it already, thank you so much. You guys are the best. Anybody who's thinking about doing it, you're second best in my heart. The day you do it, the day you pull the trigger, you will be the best with the ranks of the other patrons. It really means the world to us that people are willing to support us through this and cover our costs, really is the big thing, because we do enjoy doing it. And we do have Loreboys Prime, which of course we've offered long before we ever offered anything else. And sorry, I'm getting attacked by a kitten right now. Get off of me. And of course we are pushing our dogma this week, as we do every week, the greater good, the Loreboy Vasa, as it's called, the principle that anything you do or will do or should do
will give you horse cum in the end.
Will give you horse cum. Which is to say that it should benefit the Loreboys, because anything that gets you horse cum will benefit the Loreboys, because this week we are trading our Loreboys Prime subscriptions for the sale of horse cum. As Jamie mentioned earlier on the show, my freezers are full. I got dead bats and I got horse cum. And I got a bit of horse hair, but honestly my supplies of horse hair are running kind of thin. So I'm giving away dead bats and horse cum on this week's Loreboys Prime. Make sure to get in there, sign up for the subscription, subscribe to the dogma, and horse cum will come your way, my friend. Or
you
maybe,
better live close, because it's going to defrost fast, my dear. Yeah.
Maybe it'll be horse cum. Maybe it'll be a dead bat. You just got to close your eyes and hope for horse cum. Okay, my friend?
As soon as it's cleared and healthy, that frozen bat's going to be great. You can just have it.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Seventh caller in. Can have the frozen bat.
A batsicle. I mean, it's beautiful. Like, it's not freezer burned, I promise. It's fresh in the freezer. And just sign up for Loreboys Premium and you'll get those as soon as they become available.
Do you put it in a bag or is it just sitting in there?
It's in a bag. It's in a
Ziploc. Okay,
yeah. At least wrap it in a
towel. All bats guaranteed to be ziplocked shut or duct taped shut in a Ziploc bag. And I think that would constitute.
Just can't figure out how to close these dang things.
I think that would constitute a Loreboys.
Loreboys.
Goodbye.
Out.
Out. Weird. I had to reset my microphone. Jamie, you want to say something? Oh yeah, that picks up. It's a nice looking waveform, my friend. My name's Ethan. If I was gonna sleep in any kind of bed, it would be a llama bed, because I assume that they know comfort, because they're ornery bastards.
If I was to sleep in a bed, it would be a bed made of dog's ears, because they're so soft.
Those are the softest part of a dog, biologically speaking.
If I were to sleep in a bed, my name is Peter. I would do it at the like delicately cloud soft under fur that you brush out of a cat.
Okay,
you know when you like roll it out of the little metal hooks, it's like lighter than air. Basically,
we're really proving that Jamie's the dog person and Pete's the cat person, and Ethan's the llama person on this.
you've been an alpaca man since birth, dude.
Whoa! Don't go calling alpacas llamas, my guy. Okay, extremely offensive.
Look, they're the same. I'm okay with people's pronouns and, like, whatever. All the members of LGBT, I will adapt, but llamas and alpacas are the same thing, and I don't care if my children think I'm bigoted because of that.
All alpacas look alike. That's what you're saying, huh? That's what you're freaking saying. All camelids are the same. All camelids look alike, huh?
Exactly. Joe Biden's shipping in llamas to vote for him and steal the fucking election.
One of us did have to Google what the family, the animal family for llama was during the sound.
I was wondering how you knew that, actually. I was like, he must have typed it out.
Quick Google. But we'll see if the keyboard picks up during this. It's 7:42. Do you know where your children are? Recording a podcast, maybe. If you're our parents.
In my sack.
In your sack?
Hopefully not listening to podcasts with cursing.
Yeah, my kids are grounded forever. They got to stay in my balls until I die.
you're like a precog. It's like a precom from Minority Report where you predict their crimes.
Yeah. One of my kids is going to try and kiss a girl before he's 18. He's grounded,
I don't
mister.
Think so. No. Not my fucking watch.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.